This episode of How to Save the World is sponsored by Ateek, a New Zealand zero-waste beauty company on a mission to rid the world of plastic waste.
Check them out at ateek.co.nz. That's Ateek, E-T-H-I-Q-U-E.
Hey everyone, welcome to How to Save the World. We've got a special treat today. It's personal investigation time, our personal sins aired before you. Hey Tim.
It's a confessional episode.
Yeah, it is. Doesn't feel very comfortable. We are looking at flying today.
We are. Aviation and all of its ills environmentally. And holy smokes, this is way worse than I thought. I keep saying that for different things, but this one genuinely, oof.
Is that because you've got a personal...
I've been doing so much flying in the last like 3 years, so I feel very bad about that. But also I just didn't... It's one... I even felt this, there's a lot of academic studies on this, right? So I've done a bit of research on this, not enough, but a bit, and there's a lot of academic stuff to glean, but there's not a lot of popular articles or videos. This isn't being talked about in the general population very much yet, I think. There's the odd article that pops up.
Yeah.
Every few years, like on The Guardian or something, saying, hey, everyone, flying's really bad. I had never paid it much mind until now, so we're going to have to dig through it a bit.
Yeah, for me, I'm coming from the other end of it, where I have been aware that it's quite a big one, and it's just sat there like a guilty little pleasure that I haven't been wanting to give up. And so I guess like before I started the zero waste, and I had that sort of that niggle, that feeling of just like, oh, this isn't right. And it took a wee while for me to make some different choices and stuff. And with flying, that's sort of how it feels still. It's a part of my sustainability journey that I know it's sitting there, it's a niggle, and I don't want to give it up.
Yeah, I hear you.
And I know if I had more money, I'd do more flying.
Yeah.
Like, that's really what's constraining it.
Absolutely.
Just like drinking in my 20s. It was...
Your capacity's gone down. So, well, that's, yeah, there's a lot of stats that I've got on a couple of bits of paper in front of me, but I'll try and make the broader points rather than swimming in numbers and stuff. But this is one of the big problems, is that there has been some efficiency gains in the way that we fly, or rather the companies that actually do the flying, how they're designing the planes, and I think more specifically there's been some gains around the sides and how they're organizing passengers and freight, so they've gotten more efficient.
Yeah.
But aviation has exploded in terms of how many people are flying and how much flying those people are doing. It's gone way up, so it's completely, any efficiency gains that we've had have completely been soaked up.
Which is kind
by
of
the increase in people flying.
It's the way it goes, eh? With technology, it's the same with the efficiencies we've had in the way we can light homes or whatever. They're not getting translated through to actual gains. It's usually around the other way, because as things get cheaper, it becomes more efficient, therefore more cheaper, therefore more accessible, therefore we do it more.
Yeah, exactly.
But like Air New Zealand would be a good example. It's worth giving those guys a shout out. They've won the most sustainable airline in the world award.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. Which kind of is still worth, like, it's kind of your point. You know, they'd be the first to say it, that it makes them the least unsustainable airline in the world, you know. It's as opposed to being sustainable.
It's quite a tricky thing as well, because the more I've dug through this, I've found a bunch of stuff that, you know, running an airline, apparently the margins are not high
on
profitability.
Yeah.
So there's obviously huge amounts of turnover, and so many more people are flying now than ever before, but it's such an incredibly competitive industry. And as I say, the margins aren't very high. So one of the features that kept coming up again and again on things we need to change is the fact that aviation fuel is generally either taxed very lowly or not at all. So it gives it an unfair competitive advantage against other modes of transport, like train, like high-speed rail. But even when gas prices go up and down, it really affects the profitability of airlines, because they don't have these massive margins to soak it up. But before we drill into that, we should probably talk about what are the emissions that are created out of flying, right?
Sure, let's do that.
So The things that aeroplanes are emitting as they're burning off fuel incompletely is carbon dioxide, water vapor, which is fine, hydrocarbons, which are bad, carbon monoxide, which is bad, nitrogen oxides, sulfur oxides, lead, and black carbon.
So a lot of very bad stuff. They also sound bad.
Yeah, very nasty things. And this makes sense when you think about it, but it's not just that they're burning these chemicals off, but there is a far increased effect on what they're having on the atmosphere because they're being burned at high altitude.
Yes, it's and then there's this sort of fast frying analogy where because of that makeup, that chemical makeup, which is quite different to say what your car is emitting, you can say, well, the impacts of flying are depending on whether you're saying the impact over the next few years for those emissions or whether you're saying the next 20 or 30 years. It's a kind of a the sorts of things that that we're emitting when we fly are the things that actually have a huge impact right now, and they won't be quite as impactful as CO2 on the whole over a longer period of time. So what that means is that if you are, say, cooking something and you've got the option of putting in a slow cooker, that's kind of what the CO2 does. But flying is like kind of putting it in a frying pan and cooking it really hot.
Right.
Which
with these other chemicals that aren't CO2 that are being emitted.
Yeah, that's right. And so it means that it could put us over our tipping point as a planet just because it's so intense right now. So yeah. I think that actually, even though they're saying the longer term effects of flying aren't as bad as what some of the other methods are, I think we've got an issue right now that we need to be really aware of, that this intensity of the types of chemicals we're releasing are like mega impactful right now.
Yeah, and I mean, to go back to that phenomenon of there having an increased effect due to the altitude, there's an example that I found here from a study. So New York to LA flight, so the two coasts of the US, that flight produces 715 kg of CO2, but burned at that altitude, it's doing the equivalent damage of 1,900 kg.
Gosh, so I'm hopeless with numbers. Can you was that a double?
It's more than double. So it's more than double the amount of impact that CO2 would have if it was burned here.
That's funny. It is actually like drinking on a plane, isn't it?
Yeah,
like
exactly. Yeah. Yes, it's a perfect analogy.
I wonder
if
it's the same science kicking in.
Well, I guess it's sort of a
I've no idea.
Vaguely anaerobic kind of a thing. So yeah, maybe. Don't know. I'm no scientist. But the increases that have been going for a while are pretty freaky. At the moment, and this number changed a little bit depending on where I saw, but it looks like scientists and researchers have settled around 4 to 5% of total greenhouse gas emissions come from aviation globally, which is huge. 4 to 5% might not sound like a lot when you kind of just say it, but that is just one industry,
one activity.
That's accounting for 4 to 5% of total greenhouse gas emissions, and that's compared to for energy production, which we all, you know, it's the worst, dirtiest, worst thing, is like 8%. So it's not that far off.
Wow.
Energy production.
Wow.
Yeah.
The irony of this in the back of my mind is my nan, who was born in 1912, before I had ever heard anybody talking about climate change, would have been the 90s when actually people were talking about climate change, but I hadn't heard them. My nan she was a very elderly lady by that stage. She used to look out the window when she saw a plane go past, and she would literally go, and she'd say, "Oh, those planes, they're changing the weather."
Broken clock, you know?
Man, it's just so weird how it turned out. It's basically turned out to be true.
Yeah.
Like that was just incredibly left field.
Yeah.
Silly old Nan thing to say.
But she was right.
Yeah.
There's a weird, I keep seeing it get brought up on the internet, and I think it's the Whanganui Chronicle or Tribute or something from like the 1920s, and there's an article about how all of this coal burning is going to change the climate because it's
what?
Yeah, like they've complete they in this little art it's just this little article they completely predicted what would happen in the 20s.
Wow.
They were like, this will increase the amount of gases that will trap heat on Earth and change the climate, and we can expect to see this within 50 years. And it was like, yeah, bang on. Wow. No one was listening.
Wow. Yeah. And they just seem like cuckoo kind of.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, some, back then. Yeah. Some tiny yeah. Because who would have
thought, well, I'm digressing, but who would have thought that we could have changed the climate?
I know. It seems, completely impossible it that it could have been
come
done.
Come on,
Nan. Flying is going up by almost 5% every single year in terms of the amount of aviation that's happening, and it's expected to continue to do so until 2034 at least, so like for another 15 years. So in other words, there's no end in sight to the increase flying.
I
the way we're going at the moment.
I even just like how you feel, I guess, to take it back to a personal level, over the last 10 years, like, I feel like the expectations have shifted all around us. It used to be going overseas was something that you'd do if you were wealthy.
Yeah.
Or a really special occasion.
Yeah, totally.
And now it you see ads in winter. It's a classic. Mm. Saying, oh, go somewhere warm.
Yeah.
Treat yourself. You deserve to have a bit of a break.
And it's just so much cheaper than it used to be.
Yeah.
Particularly international flying is just so much cheaper.
You know what I'm itching to do? But on. I know you've still got fun statistics for us, is I really want to know how much you've flown over the last year or...
It's a lot. So Waveney made me do this calculator thing where I put in all my flights for the last 12 months.
And I did it too.
You did it as well.
Yeah.
So for reference, there was two, maybe three international trips and quite a lot of domestic flying. What's your number that it gave you for your emissions?
Well, for me, firstly was I thought, I've probably done about three return flights, and I haven't left the country in the last 12 months, and it's all basically Auckland, Christchurch. We used to live in Christchurch, which is the situation so many people are in when they're half stuck between a place where they've got loved ones or whatever.
Yeah.
But anyway, and then I looked through my diary and realised I'd done six trips. So it was about double what I could remember. And funnily enough, some of it was there was speaking at an environmental conference. There was a different time I went away for the permaculture conference. And just recently I've done tutoring a zero waste course. So half of my flying was for environmental reasons. And then the other half was just completely... superfluous, not
just
work.
Some trips,
yeah, just fun, like mountain biking trip in South Island. Actually this week, which I've just can't believe it, like within a week of us recording this, I'm going to be flying to Napier for no reason other than to visit a friend.
But that's normal.
Yeah,
that's what everyone's doing. This
yeah,
is the thing.
Yeah.
So what was your total?
Okay, my total was 4.4 tons.
That's a lot, eh?
Yeah. Because I got a bit carried away and I did my car footprint as well.
Yeah,
that's a bit high, isn't it?
Wicked high.
Yeah, so it's actually about half that. So it's about
2.5 tons in 1 year.
Which is actually is quite interesting in terms of that those six flights, which is quite short haul, really short haul, is about half of all of my...
Your whole carbon footprint.
Yeah, exactly. For transport.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I've fessed up.
So mine for just flights was just under 9 tons.
Well, that's not too bad.
It's pretty bad.
I thought it was going to be like... really like 50 or something.
To be honest, the year before that probably would have been even worse than that. But
so that's three tons. International flights.
I think it was two, but I think it was three.
Yeah.
And quite a lot of domestic flights as well. Maybe six or seven of those.
So there were two things for me that came up when I was thinking about this episode. One was how I can't visualize. I have no idea what a ton of gas weighs.
How do we think about 9 tons?
I have no idea around that. And the other was sort of around how we offset it, I guess, and the expense to do with each ton of emissions. So I've done a couple of little, what do you call them, like colourful statistics, or, you know, the things that create pictures in our minds, and just to think through. For a start, when you think of air, you think of it like not weighing anything, right?
Yeah.
And I was thinking about how water is actually really heavy, but when we're in water, when we're swimming, it makes us feel lighter. So actually, air does have weight. If it didn't have any weight at all, we'd actually feel heavier.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Kinda.
So it's kind of carrying us. So okay, a ton of air is roughly about what would be in a house.
Oh, okay.
So just sort
volumetrically,
of
volumetrically, a house contains a ton of air.
Yeah, roughly about a ton of air.
Whoa.
So that, for me,
so
I've never heard anyone...
9 houses worth of just carbon dioxide into the atmosphere from just
flying. Yeah, because it's a ton of greenhouse gas as opposed to like actual atmosphere, which so our atmosphere has got. It's like 99% all of the neutral stuff and the stuff that we breathe in it. All of those greenhouse gases are well less than 1%. So if you you have to sort of times everything out by at least whatever it is, 99% or whatever. That's not right.
By 100. You times it out by 100 if it's 1%.
Okay, thanks.
That's the weight. That's but I like that. So it's I hate it, but it's a good, useful visual. So it's a house full. Mm. A house full of bad gas is 1 ton.
Yeah.
Roughly.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah.
Not cool.
No.
The problem is, right, with flying, is there doesn't seem to be a lot of kind of alternative. There's a lot of things that you can do alternatives for, right? So,
tell me about it. Like with zero waste stuff or veganism, it's like there's so many other things that you can eat.
You can eat differently. You can get different packaging and stuff. Particularly, we are in New Zealand, which is an island nation that is very far from everywhere else.
Yes, it's a huge topic for us as New Zealanders because we are isolated if we don't fly, and I think it shifts our whole mentality. If
Absolutely.
We take flying off the picture, it's like,
yeah,
who are we? Yeah,
because a lot of the things I was reading and some videos that I was watching was centered around some Americans, but a lot of Europeans. So it seems like the Europeans and particularly Swedish people have really taken to this idea of the harm of aviation than anyone else, and I guess that can make sense because it's one of those things where, like, it's like if you worked in the coal industry, you will switch yourself off to the reality of how harmful it is.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because you're in it. And I feel like we're in New Zealand, we almost feel like it's completely necessary for our quality of life to fly overseas.
Yeah.
Every now and then. So we will switch ourselves off and be less receptive to the damage of aviation. Whereas in Europe, they actually do have viable options. So for holidays, they can get on trains and go other places.
Yeah.
And it does take a bit longer. But the environmental impact of trains, and I didn't look into this like really at all, but it's just fractions. It's a fraction of air travel.
I remember somebody saying that if everybody in New Zealand who had the word environmental or environmentalist in their job title actually caught the train from Auckland to Wellington instead of flying, things would be a lot better than they are.
Yeah.
But it's a hard one catching the train here. You know, just if we're looking at that Auckland-Wellington haul, it takes like a full day really expensive.
Half our governments keep selling Kiwi Rail and then we buy it back when another government comes in, which creates this very dysfunctional, expensive utility keeps swapping hands all the time.
And then as consumers, we love it. We love the idea of it, but we don't use it. I remember being really sad hearing that they were going to stop the line and, you know, I wouldn't.
Oh, the Overlander or whatever it's called.
Well,
the...
I can't remember now. It was a couple of years ago and they were talking about stopping the passenger service, and then I don't think they did in the end. But maybe
they did. No. There was a big public uproar, so I think we kept it.
Yeah.
But high-speed rail seems like a very necessary part of this picture on the global scale. New Zealand's got some kind of unique topographical challenges to do with that because we've we're quite small, but we've got a lot of mountains and things like that to get through, which is tricky. But we do have a rail network, and we just need to make it work better. But internationally, and particularly in the States, like high-speed rail so needs to be a part of the picture of what they do going forward. Because the let me find the stat, because this one was freaky. Oh, but while we're talking about trains, here's one. So the Swedes, right, they're actually... they seem to be driving their demand down for flying, like consumer-led. So they've really got their A into G, and it's fallen 4% year on year. And I think that was comparing 2015 and 16.
That is amazing. Good on them.
Yeah, which is pretty awesome. And train travel, it was increasing a lot. I saw different numbers on that.
So what would it take for us to get there in New Zealand?
That is such a good question. I think... you've got to understand the problem, right? And I think even you and I doing a bit of research ahead of doing this episode, like, I've got a way better picture of how damaging aviation is now. And I genuinely will be changing my behaviour off the back of this and how, you know, I treat holidays and that sort of thing.
Any on-air commitments you're prepared to make there, Tim?
I don't have like a firm rule-based anything yet, but just like...
any challenges?
It will so be in my head now to go, hey, for example... my wife and I just took an amazing road trip in the South Island. We could have got, because it's winter, we could have easily, like, you know, gone to somewhere else than Ireland or the Northern Hemisphere or something where it's warmer. But she hadn't seen, like, that west coast of the South Island. I've only done it once. And so we admittedly did drive, which is not great. But, you know, in terms of the ranking of things, instead of going overseas, we went and just hired a car and did that. And it was absolutely, like, it was as if we were in the Alps. You know,
well,
actually, what I mean?
That is the irony, because New Zealand is an international tourist destination.
That's it.
Like,
and yeah, I think
as good as it gets for so many people.
In terms of solutions and stuff for the global market, I think trains are so important. And in New Zealand, I really think we need to take a mental shift to go, there's so much here. Like, have you explored all of New Zealand?
That's genius.
It's so it's so much cheaper as well, and kind of easier. If you try and eliminate plane travel out of it, then that's really good. So you would kind of swap out the time thing instead of doing an international flight for maybe getting a train.
That's good too.
From Auckland to somewhere else, or from, you know, anywhere. Mm. And there's just so many different, like, zones in New Zealand. There's so many little areas. So, you know, if you want to do an alpine trip, you do the South Island, go to Wanaka and Queenstown. You can do all of that fun stuff. If you want to see, like, the most amazing beaches on earth, you can go to Northland and even, you know, Cape Ringinga and up in the far north. And if you don't live in Wellington, go there and hang out. It's a really cool city. Christchurch. I've just spent a week in Christchurch doing some gigs down there, and it's got all this incredible stuff going on. So there's, like, there's all these different flavoured little centres where you can hang out and just get out of town. Because often that's what you want in a holiday. You actually just want to be away from your home.
It's so you know? True. Yeah, just you so you're not getting caught up in all the domestic tasks that you can't help but see every time you look, cast your eye around.
Exactly.
Yeah, but no, I think you're hitting on the marketing thing we get sucked into a bit, or a lot,
yeah.
Where all the New Zealanders are looking at the ads or having this sort of sense of, oh, away is, or an exotic destination to all these other places, and it's just in reverse. If you're in London or... New York, the ads are for New Zealand, and it looks like this. When you're over there and you see those ads, if you know, happen to come across a New Zealand billboard or something, you're just like, wow. And you have that same sense of, what an amazing exotic location.
So funny you mentioned that, because that was the whole genesis of this recent road trip in the South Island, was that when my wife did like a placement in Germany when she was doing her medical training, she was basically couch surfing in this guy's apartment with her friend. And he recently came back to, he'd never been here actually, he came to Auckland. Mm. And so he invited a few of us for a drink, and he had a bunch of his mates, and they were sitting out in a van. And he was like, we're going to do the South Island, West Coast, where should we go? And both of my wife and I were like, oh, we don't really know. And then we were quite embarrassed that we didn't know. And my wife sort of made a commitment. She was like, I've got to go and see these bloody towns, these beautiful sounding towns, so that I actually know what I'm talking about. Because it's like right on our doorstep.
It's so funny. Good on you guys. Because it is. It's this bizarre, the closer it is, the less exotic it feels.
And it is a bit of BS. Like, you don't need to go international to either get off the grid, if that's what you desire, or just to kind of get out of town. Because I think there is such a mental thing about you leave your home. But it doesn't mean you have to change your country necessarily.
This episode is brought to you by Atik. Atik is a New Zealand natural beauty company that stopped over 3.3 million plastic bottles going to landfill.
Wow.
Wow.
Their gorgeous hair, face and body wash products are mindfully packaged in biodegradable and compostable materials because Atik are dedicated to building a better world.
Atik's products are all certified animal cruelty free.
Yes.
Made only of plant-based and vegan ingredients. And they're kind to your wallet because they last 2 to 5 times longer than bottled beauty products.
Get yourself or someone you care about some Atik today by going to atikworld.com. And that's Atik, E-T-H-I-Q-U-E. It's French, I think. It's a real tricky one because I think there's sort of a whole social aspect of diversity and throwing yourself into other cultures and learning about other people and language and food and customs and all of the good things that come with that and the whole global melting pot thing. I think we're going to have to rethink exactly how we get that done rather than plonking yourself in another place.
Yeah, actually, I've thought about this before, how it's one of those things that I've got in the bag from traveling when I was younger, mm-hmm. and it's something really, really precious to me, those memories. Yeah. And it's like, if you're just having left school or whatever, you're in your 20s, say, listening to this, and you're much more aware of the carbon footprint than what, I mean, I wasn't aware at all at that age.
But also you haven't done your...
No, well, that's what I mean. So yet. If you're listening and you're that age and you're... It's like, it's all very well for me to be like, oh, yeah, I really want to make a commitment to just, you know, checking out the South Island. Because I've already checked all these cool places globally out.
Yeah.
And it meant a lot to me and it was really awesome. And that's the thing, actually, Tim. I guess that comes down to my emotional response to this one. It's like, I have found it, which is why I've done it. I found it easier to give up plastic or, you know, a big chunk of it than flying. Because flying is about connection. It's about friendship. Like, you know, one of those trips was to celebrate my parents-in-law's 50th wedding anniversary.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's that, yeah, like you say, it's that connection with people, whether it's your loved ones or whether it's actually just immersing yourself in different cultures and what you learn out of that. And I mean, it's incredible. So.
And right now, there isn't really a substitute for that. You know,
no. I mean, if you want to be hardcore, you can go, right, I'm not going to fly, but I'd still want those cultural experiences. I mean, you know, you're talking about that amazing sense of the exotic in the South Island or the Northland beaches, and you can have a cross-cultural experience in our urban centres. Like, if you wanted to go out of your way, it's not hard. It's right there.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not the same.
It's not exactly going to Japan and being downtown Tokyo with the neon lights and stuff.
Should we jump to solutions for this? Or
I'd just like to paint the darkest picture possible before we move on. This is the fact I was trying to find before. So at the moment, the goal is to keep global temperature increases below 2%. 2 degrees centigrade, because that's one of the tipping points that people talk about. Right now, aviation is on track to consume our entire emissions budget by 2050.
That's a good statistic. So, as in, you know, not good, but
yeah. If we want to keep to below 2 degrees C increase, which we need to do to kind of really have a chance of surviving on the planet.
Man, that's full on.
Aviation by 2050 will consume the entire budget for emissions.
Man.
And it's like, so I was, because I'm a big nerd, I was kind of drilling into why does this seem to be such an intractable problem? And despite the fact that flying has gotten more and more efficient over time, there have been no dramatic increases. Jet engines, as it turns out, are actually super efficient when they're going full throttle.
Yeah.
Really efficient, but they're doing a lot of work, obviously. They're moving tons of cargo and passengers through the air, huge distances. So number one, there's just a lot of energy being expelled because there's a lot of work, in the physics sense of the word, being done. But number two, the other issue is they're very efficient when they're going full throttle, but they're often not. So when you're throttling up, throttling down, or cruising, it's not going anywhere near its max efficiency. So I watched a TED talk, a TEDx talk by a guy. The TEDx was in Christchurch. He was a Kiwi dude. I'm not sure where he's based. But he and his company have developed this unique new design for a jet engine, which, if I've understood it correctly, kind of splits the jet engine into two parts. And it makes sure that the jet engine part of it is going full throttle all the time. And it can get that other work that's being done to go through an electric motor to basically store that energy for later. So it can use it while cruising kind of shut off the jet bit. So it's going maximum efficiency and just taking that excess thrust that it's not using and storing that energy that it can use later with an electric motor, which is quite a clever thing to do. I'm not sure what the efficiency gains would be, but
I think it comes down to what I was saying before about how those gains in efficiency really do translate to gains in profit, because it's costing them a whole heap less,
exactly,
which means they can bring those price points down.
I know
I've got a lot more in me if I could afford it, and especially if I wasn't feeling guilty about it. Because I think, you know, I've been saying I'm not curbing myself, but actually I am. There's a degree to which I could have taken a few more flights and I haven't. Like friends 40ths or whatever, I was like, well, you know, I think I can skip that. But if it's cheaper again, like it's just harder for that. So I mean, it's really great to hear that there's some cool technology out there, but we still need, well, it's twofold, isn't it? It's the governments who need to come in and put
reflect
those
the
fair
true
exactly
cost of it.
And that's something that we can't bring ourselves to do on a personal level.
Yeah.
So it's the governments, and then it's us as well, and making these resolves. Like, it's incredible what you're saying about the Swedes, that despite it all, they are actually bringing down how much
it
they're flying.
To, yeah,
good
like
on them.
Globally,
I just think that's so cool.
Globally, aviation's going up so much and they managed to bring it down 4% year on year. So, because I feel like we're probably going to get to offsetting quite soon.
Yes.
And just related to what you're saying, because I found one, and it wasn't a commonly held opinion, but it was, I think, some environmentalist researcher in the States, some scientist, and he was making an argument. He's quite out there by himself, but he was saying that carbon offsetting for aeroplanes is probably doing more harm than good.
Oh, what?
His thesis.
Why are you even saying
was
this out
mainly
loud?
Centered around the fact that, you know, when you can pay $8 to offset it.
Oh, I know what he's going to say.
That whole guilt trap goes
yes,
away. So
it's
you
like
just
recycling, actually. I kind of get it now.
So it's the carbon offsetting is not solving the whole problem of what you're doing, but it feels like it is by paying that $8. Mm-hmm. You know, is it you feel like, oh, well, now it's of neutral impact to the environment, and it isn't. That's not how
well,
it works.
Well, I think we've taken so many trees away over the last 50 years that with all, basically, a lot of the carbon offsetting programs are paying to plant trees. And if you look at the carbon cycle, all we're doing on the big picture is making a little start towards replanting some of the trees we've chopped down.
Yeah,
it's
true.
Like, that doesn't mean that we've still got all of that extra carbon in the air from all the flying and, you know, all of the other things we've done with oil in the last 100 years.
Yeah.
It's like, we're just kidding ourselves.
Yeah. Not to say don't offset your flights, please do offset your flights. And I have to, I will put my hand up, this is very embarrassing, but I have not offset my flights until now, but I definitely will now. Because I just like, I didn't really understand how damaging flying
interesting
was.
So I,
this would definitely be the worst thing I'm doing for the environment.
Yeah, because actually,
I don't have a car. I'm now eating a plant-based diet. Like, by huge factors, this must be overwhelmingly the worst thing I'm doing.
I think so. Because actually, I mean, to be honest, I was feeling a little bit guilty around the meat eating thing, researching this, because it seems that it's kind of a comparable thing. So good for you with the veganism, Tim.
Kinda.
So offsetting, it's something that I do, and I've read that it's something that most people don't do. I think it's single figure the people that do it, which means that there's
if you don't know what it is, sorry as well, because
in
New Zealand makes it really easy, and I think Jetstar do it as well. There's basically, there's a, for a lot of airlines who subscribe to one of the programs, there's a box you can tick while you're booking your flights, which adds roughly about 3% of the flight cost to go to specific programs that have carbon.
So to give you some idea, it's usually less than $5. Like, it's for my New Zealand flights.
For domestic,
it's just, yeah. It's just so cheap. And so I've always been like, how is it possible that something that's so damaging can be offset by something so cheap?
Yeah.
And then I just get so, I mean, this is probably my favorite part of what we're doing here in this podcast, is just to connect people with this. Easy. I mean, really, this episode could have been 3 minutes if we'd wanted it to be. This isn't palm oil, people. It's as simple as, man.
Yeah.
It's just fly less and offset.
Mm.
And the offsetting is, like you say, it's easy, but it's phenomenal how few people do it.
Mm.
So Colmar Brunton do a really cool report in New Zealand around consumers and how they consume in a green way or how they don't consume in a green way. And from that, we know that it's about 90% of New Zealanders say that they are highly committed or mediumly committed to sustainable lifestyles, which, and then you look at how many people are offsetting and it's just,
it's
come
the
on,
labeling
guys.
Thing,
come
like
on, guys.
100% pure NZ thing. It's
yeah,
like, good
it's
label.
Like we've labeled ourselves that. But it's just, this is a really simple one and it's almost painless. And the effects are huge. Like, to offset your flight, which with all those tons of carbon dioxide and all the other things you mentioned, just for a few dollars, like for the price of a coffee, like, it would be wonderful if they could absorb that cost into the ticket. So it's just
add it, though. This is my thing, right? I think, and I reckon it would take a law change to do this, because I think for the airlines, it's too difficult from like a business model point of view to
really
do this.
It's really competitive, the pricing, yeah.
You just say legally, airliners have to incorporate into the cost of your ticket the carbon offset.
Yeah, totally.
You're not really going to notice it. You know, domestic flight, say on average $70, you pay an extra like $4.
Yeah.
It's just the credit card fee is about $350
or something.
Yeah,
that's right. We've managed to absorb that, eh?
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, I think, because I know that you're a huge advocate for sort of consumer driven change and consumer activism in terms of just buying differently and leading the charge that way. And I totally agree that that's a super powerful thing. With the flying thing, I think it needs to be mandated to the airlines that, and it also doesn't seem that complicated to me to go, you are now legally responsible for carbon offsetting your flights. I guess probably the kickback would be, why are we being singled out as an industry, particularly one that's not super profitable as a percentage versus others?
Question. It's obvious. Because like you were saying, they're a huge contributor to greenhouse gas.
Yeah,
huge.
And they had, like, I think part of the reason why it's so cheap is because, as we mentioned earlier, jet fuel is either taxed very lowly or not at all. And the reason for that is because there's all of these wonderful economic outcomes that happen for a company's economy and GDP based on flight activity. So it's tourism, it's goods, it's all of the financial transactions that are happening. A lot of that has a really close link to planes in the air. It's another reason why countries will always do anything they can to bail out their national carrier. It's like, there was a weird thing, because I'm kind of novicely interested in economics, and I remember reading ages ago that when a country first gets set up as a proper nation state, one of the first ports of call is getting a national carrier, an airliner. It's like get a flag, get an anthem, get a national airliner.
Especially if you're in Ireland.
Why is that?
Well, because...
Oh, in Ireland. I think you said in Ireland.
Oh.
But don't you reckon that like governments should just tell them to... That has to be part
yes,
of the price
actually,
of the ticket?
Thank you for lobbing that back, because I wanted to say that this is my position. Like, it's a both and yes, the governments do need... Like, exactly, I totally agree with everything you said. The governments need to be legislating XYZ to make it all happen and to make it a fair playing field for aviation companies that are wanting to offset. It's just that, as consumers, we are so quick to shift the responsibility if we're looking for an excuse. So it's yes, the governments need to be doing this, and I'll support them in any way that I can. But it doesn't mean that I can say as an individual, oh, it's terrible, the government should be doing this, and therefore until they do, I'm going to keep flying and you know, like most people, not bother offsetting. So that's where it's at for me. I totally agree that, you know, a lot of these things need to be led by government and industry, totally. But it doesn't mean we don't have power.
Responsibility.
Oh, yeah, it is actually. I guess it's what I'm saying. It's a responsibility and a power. It's not just sort of some sort of pious responsibility. It's like actually it can all just boil down to us. Like the Swedes, just they actually are just doing it.
Yeah, they are.
Mm.
I hope I got this stat right. So much hanging on that. Did you want to hear kind of a slightly off-the-wall solution that's been proposed by an outfit in the UK?
Yes.
So there's this organisation, like a lobby group, of a bunch of environmentalists who are trying to offer solutions for aviation, the damage that it's doing. They're called A Free Ride. And what they're proposing is that to acknowledge the fact that, you know, all of the reasons that we've mentioned, flying is kind of really cool and enjoyable and sort of important to a lot of people's lives. So what they're advocating for is that everyone gets one tax-free return flight per year. But if you fly more than once a year, you start paying a levy on your flights, which specifically that money gets put towards environmental solutions to offset the emissions that the aviation industry is producing. And the more that you fly, the higher the levy goes, so it actually starts stacking and increasing.
Love it.
And that was reflective of the fact I did write it down. Here we go. Reflective of the fact that in the UK, 70% of flights are taken by 15% of people.
Hmm.
So there's just a few people who are taking the vast majority of all of this, all these flights, all these plane rides.
Do you think we're in that category? That's the golden question, isn't it?
Unfortunately, yeah. I'm in the 10% or something.
The wealthy probably. Elite.
Yeah. Well, I do it for work. You know? So it's a complicated relationship. But anyway, it's I think, you know,
it seems like a
wacky solution, but I think there's some good stuff behind it. And if you want to see more about that, I'll put a link for them as well in the show notes. So that's A Free Ride. Biofuels, I just wanted to mention because I had hit across that a few times. So Air New Zealand was actually, they made some historic flight, I think in 2010, using a specific kind of biofuel, and they've been quite hot on that as a technology. Because I know there'd be some people who are saying that that's a solution in the future. Biofuels, really complicated environmental story. So generally speaking, there was some quite like complicated research that's gone on into trying to drill down into how environmentally friendly biofuels are, and the way that we're producing them currently, they're actually a net negative because so many fossil fuels go into the production of the biofuel, and that's done by things like, so you'll grow an enormous monocrop of something like corn to produce the biofuel, and so you've got all the pesticides going in and all of the energy costs that are done to grow the corn as much as it is, and then extracting and processing and all of that, and it actually, you have a greater environmental impact than if you had just used petroleum.
Mm.
So it's one of those things where there are definitely methods, way better methods to get biofuels, but the way that we're producing them currently is really bad.
Yeah, so it's like they're not the magic bullet.
It's not the magic bullet currently, and you know, I think realistically, unfortunately, biofuels are probably going to be a bit of a greenwashing thing where people will go, no, we're using biofuel. And it's like, yeah, but if you look at the bigger picture of it, it's actually not nearly as environmentally friendly as you think. And later down the track as well, and this is again my nerd flag flying, like the electrification of transport is a big thing, and we've seen that come into cars now, and they're actually like getting popular. You know, every car manufacturer now has a pretty popular battery-operated car, electric car, and airplanes aren't there yet, and they won't be for a while, unfortunately.
They can't just chuck an electric engine in.
Exactly. It'll be the final, huge, big cargo ships in the water, but apart from that, airplanes will be the last thing that could get because it requires such a huge capacity of energy to be stored to take it on these big long haul flights. So it's not really an option. So that, I only mention those things to illustrate why it's important to try to fly less offset where you can. Because
that's what I was thinking too. It's like
the magical things on the horizon. Yeah, like
they're not that magical.
They appear to not be so magical when you actually look into them. Yeah, and I think super viable.
I can come across as a bit anti-technology too, because I will always bring up that same line about how it's really our mindset and the values that we're applying to these things. So if we did get some of those things happening in the future, it's like we've still got to wrestle with these really basic things around how much we will be consuming. And if let's say if we could have a biofuel that was sustainable or whatever, it doesn't mean, like, it's just more complicated than we're often willing to acknowledge.
Yeah.
I mean, we're just talking abstractly now anyway. But it is
more complicated, but it's also the solutions are often more simple as well. It's just like, just consume less shit. Fly less.
It's just fly less. Like I said, this could have been a 3-minute podcast. It is just so simple. Just fly less and offset.
Obviously, you know, that comes with all the caveats of, you know, people aren't going to go missing funerals and stuff that are out of town, or weddings or whatever. Mm. You know what I mean? Mm. But it's just one more of those things to kind of have in your head. And it's really important to know the picture, even if you can't make an immediate impact on something. Like, we can't be shying away from the realities of what we're doing to the planet at the moment. So flying might be one of those ones for you where you can't actually do anything differently yourself. I think it's still really important for people to know and be armed with that information. Because maybe later down the track, everyone knowing can lead to government action.
Exactly. You know,
for example.
Yeah. And it's sort of drops in that consciousness bucket too.
It does.
Because it's like, this is something that I've been wanting to get on top of for a while. And I feel like I'm ready now to... take some steps. Like you, like, probably don't want to put anything sort of definite around it, because it is something that, like you say, if it's a funeral or something, you want to be able to have that flexibility. But it's just about, I guess, like the Swedes, just bringing it in and reducing rather than expanding when actually flights are getting cheaper and we've got that option too. But also thought, just on a practical note, might be good to do some shout outs to the carbon footprinting tools that we use.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So we used, it was EnviroMark, which is a New Zealand one, which is great actually, because so many of the ones I looked at were for overseas. So
that one was so good to use.
Yeah.
It's great. They've just got like every airport on earth, and you just go, is it a domestic flight or an international flight? Is it return or one way? And then they've just got all the airports.
Yeah. It's really simple. And for domestic, I thought, oh, they're not going to have Great Barrier, but they did.
Awesome.
Yeah. So they were great. And the cool thing about them is that, because I had never, I mean, well, it's been in the vague consciousness that you can offset for things other than flying. But I was like, oh, yeah, whatever. But anyway, using their calculator, I realized that the second half of it is, once they've told you what your emission is, then they give you an option to be able to offset it.
Oh, choice. Mm. So like they connect you directly with some tools so you can basically hand over your credit card and sort
that
it
out.
That
is my understanding. I didn't finish that part of it. And the other one is Future Fit. When I say the other one, I think there's you know, quite a few options out there, but Future Fit is an actual Auckland based one, well, New Zealand based, but again, it's like so good to, like, the way we farm our meat and the way we have our energy in New Zealand, with it mostly being hydro, we are really quite different. And our isolation, so the way, if something's coming in from overseas, it will have a higher carbon footprint. We've got genuinely quite a different construct of the way things work here. So it's really good to be able to use a New Zealand-based carbon footprint calculator. So we will throw those links into the show notes.
Yes, absolutely. Just click on the description. But just fly less, as we say.
Yeah.
We're going to try
to. Fly less, I offset. Yeah, we need to obviously keep ourselves accountable to this, don't we?
Yeah, checking in. Yeah. And try and change your mindset for what a holiday is as well. Especially, like we said, if you live in New Zealand. We're so spoiled here.
It's from where you'd rather be.
Go to the beach. Go to the other side of the island that you're on. Awesome. All right, we will catch you next time. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the episode, please give us a rating, share us around on social media. That'd be super helpful. Tell your mates we exist, and we will see you in the next episode.
See ya.
Thanks again to our wonderful sponsor, Etiq. Etiq are a zero-waste beauty company dedicated to ridding the world of plastic waste.
Woo. Get yourself or someone you love some Etiq products from etiqueworld.com.